outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
I want to welcome Vince Coakley to the God Journey. Vince, welcome. You've been here before. Vince Coakley is the host of The Vince Coakley Show on WBT in Charlotte and Word Radio in Greensville, South Carolina. I've often been on his show. I've enjoyed a friendship with him as I pass through Charlotte now and then. We've had lots of meals together. Vince, welcome to the show. Glad to have you. It's your second time, I think.
I think so. Always a privilege, man.
Yeah, somehow you get me on your show more than I get you on mine. I have to figure out why that is. But. Probably the time works out to be about the same, since usually it's 5 minutes when I'm with you. But
yes, exactly.
So how are you surviving this pandemic, my friend, in Charlotte?
Hey, pretty well. You know, it's we are beginning to open up somewhat here. Charlotte's a border city, and things are a little more open in South Carolina. They're a little bit ahead of us. But here in North Carolina, in the coming days, you know, we're going to see some more things open, like the malls are going to open up next week.
Oh, wow.
But the biggest thing for me is the oddest thing is the social distancing, the impact of that, and how, you know, I think you're a lot like me in this respect. You're a very relational person. You like to give nice, big, warm hugs to people and, you know, meet with people in person. And it's very odd not to be able to do that. You know, I started a list a few weeks ago. Because I meet new people all the time that I'm very eager to get together with. And so I've started a list that I've said to people over social media, once this craziness is over with, you know, we'll have to get together for a meal or for drinks or whatever it is. And that list is getting kind of lengthy.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. And I'm not even sure when we get back together and have a meal together, we're not probably going to even be able to hug for quite a while until, I guess, some of us get this coronavirus and get it passed or something, get the antibodies on the other side.
Yeah, you're right about that. I think there's so much mystery that surrounds this, so much mystery.
There really is. For something we knew has been coming for a long time, we seemed incredibly unprepared to deal with it. But I'm finding I've been as busy as I've ever been. I'm doing a ton of video kinds of chats, FaceTime, Zoom, whatever with people. And I'm finding it to be very, very satisfying and very deep. I mean, I just even some of the interviews we've had on the God Journey recently have been very tender and very open. And talked to a guy yesterday who I'd never met. He just wrote me and said, hey, can I talk to you? I'm a ministry guy. I got some questions for you. And man, we went deep fast and it was tender. And I enjoy this guy's questions, his openness. He's standing at the beginning of a journey that I know is going to challenge him in some wonderful ways and fulfill some of the things in his heart. So I thought that was pretty cool.
And this is a guy in Charlotte, right?
He's in Charlotte. So he asked me if I'd ever been there. I said, man, I got lots of friends in Charlotte. So yeah. I do. And I actually mentioned you. I said we'd had a conversation earlier in the day with you. So, yeah, you called me. You were talking about something you'd shared on your show and wanted me to listen to it. But somehow we haven't been able to work out the link so I can hear it. So, but I was intrigued enough to say, let's talk about that, because we were getting a pretty good discussion going. I'm thinking, no, this is something I think other people want to listen into. So,
yes. And at some point, I'll probably bring in some thoughts from another good friend of mine, Steve Crosby, who helped to drive this point home a little bit better, but it starts here. It's kind of interesting. Wayne, every day I accumulate show content all the time. I have a little, I use Evernote, and basically I put links, I copy social media posts, all kinds of things. And then the day of the show, the morning of, I put together a rundown. And this particular morning, it was a couple Fridays ago, it just hit me. I thought, I need to talk about the danger of dogma. And, you know, one of the things I really love is alliteration, as you probably noticed here, the danger of dogma.
Yep. Yep.
And the two areas that I thought would be great to talk about would be religion and science. We're at a stage, Wayne, where we are hearing a lot of conversation about, well, let's trust the science. Let's trust the science. And it gave me a great idea to start off the broadcast. I thought, why don't I incorporate my spiritual journey and what happened about 10 years ago with what's going on now in the scientific realm? And it was very, very, it went over very well. I've gotten a lot of feedback. In fact, a number of people have been asking for this audio for that very reason. And here's the premise that I came to, and here's the headline. We hold on to and we embrace wholeheartedly truth. But at the same time, we hold loosely onto our own perspective. So it's kind of a paradox. We embrace truth where we find it, but at the same time, what we think we know, we hold very loosely onto that, because the danger is once we get into the realm of dogma, we're going to blind ourselves and we're going to miss opportunities to grow. And frankly, we're going to find ourselves profoundly ignorant. I guess develop this by, and I did this by sharing a little bit of the spiritual journey I went through. I've been a Christian ever since I was a preteen, but I liken my experience back around 2009 to being born again. And the reason that happened is so many things that I believe to be the truth, that I believe to be in the Bible, about the church system, about leadership, about what church really is, what relationship is with God and with each other, I had been operating under a paradigm which I came to realize was not biblical. So all this time I thought, okay, I follow the truth. I follow the Bible. And I came to realize, guess what? And I don't mind mentioning, it was really the book Pagan Christianity that helped blow so many of these myths out of my head. But once I read this, I realized I haven't embraced the truth. I've embraced tradition that has been dressed up in elements of truth. So I've had to go through many layers of pharisectomies to get to where I am now. And I'm sure there will be more. So what I did is in the same way, I said, this is where we have to be with science as well. Let me back up here because... And feel free to interrupt at any time, but where I, what was really important for me to do in this spiritual realm also is in the area of authority, because I was putting authority and trusting authority in the hands of men, people, no matter how well-intentioned, it was too important. And so in the same way, let's go to this crisis right now. What we're looking for is certainty. And so I see people all the time on social media, they keep, well, we need to trust the science. We need to trust the science. And I keep asking the question, which science? Because I think if you're watching as closely as I am, Wayne, there's not universal agreement on models, on some of the scientific conclusions of things. And some of the things that some of these, quote, experts thought a month ago are no longer true. They have different perspectives. So the bottom line is, again, we hold on to truth. We hold loosely onto our own perspective. Did I explain that well?
Yeah, I think I get what you're saying. And I really, I mean, Sarah and I have been watching Cosmos lately, this update of Carl Sagan's show on PBS. And it's I forget the guy's name who's moderating this one. He's a brilliant guy. I love his approach. I love what he's sharing. But then he kind of crosses the line with science. Science is an observation of events, and it's conclusions drawn from those. And if you're a real scientist, those are ever changing. Now, some things don't change. The law of gravity doesn't change. You know, there's some things that stay pretty certain. But when it reaches out to the Big Bang and the cosmos and all those kinds of things, there are hypotheses that are explored. But when people turn science into dogma, and so at one point he says in the show, so obviously there is no Adam and Eve and none of that could have happened. And I go, okay, see, now you've just made a step away from science and what you're observing. And I told my grandkids in the Jesus story thing that we're doing, we covered Genesis. So one of the things I talked to them from Genesis was, science isn't always wrong, but science isn't in competition with faith. It just isn't.
Right.
It doesn't need to be. There have been times when religion has been wrong about science. We wanted to go kill some people because we wanted to believe the earth, the sun goes around the earth instead of the earth going around the sun, because that's what we'd always believed. The earth is the center of the universe. We thought it was a biblical interpretation. Then come to find out that's totally wrong. But like you're saying, it didn't change the truth. It merely changed our perspective of the truth.
Right.
And right. So, yeah, I think that that's this whole fight between science and religion is so contrived on both sides. It's religionists that want to say, well, we have our Bibles, so we have it right. The earth is 6,000 years old. And scientists say, nah, it looks like it's 14, not the science, but the universe is 14 billion years old. And so, and humans have been here for 100,000 years. So how do we process that? And I don't think the Bible was ever meant to be a science book. It's a why book. It's a book of truth about God and why we're here and how to live in the reality of a broken world and how the creation got broken. And to me, for instance, and I've had this conversation with a lot of people, I think Adam and Eve are historical figures. I do. But if I find out that was a metaphor for what happened to humanity, I would still be okay with that story because the truth is still there.
And here's the key thing, by the way, a scientific lines, the thing I like to remind people is that it used to be scientifically reasoned that we lived on a planet that was flat.
Yep.
So that was also thought to be scientific truth at one time. So the danger we get into with dogma is that we lock ourselves into positions. And here's the other thing we do, unfortunately, and you've touched on this, Wayne, we set up these false binary choices that science has to be right or religion or Christianity has to be right. It's one or the other, and we've got to throw one of them out. And the truth of the matter is they both have valuable contributions. Now, the problem is science invades into the realm of the spirit and attempts to explain what is not going to be explainable scientifically. It's just not.
Yep.
So then you have people who think they're experts on their meddling is really what it comes down to. And what I think we all have to learn how to do, Wayne, is stay in our lanes and understand this is not an area where I am adept or I have an area of understanding. But at the same time, my perspective doesn't necessarily have to be against yours just because we're coming from different disciplines or different areas. So I think the main problem we get into, again, is where this becomes dogma. And then we're going to club people over the head. And then we're going to set up a type of authoritarian approach to make sure. I mean, and this is largely what I'm seeing, you know, not with the risk of getting political, with the radical environmental movement, which is convinced that the earth, that human beings are going to destroy the earth and, you know, through global warming, whatever it is. And that somehow people who do not agree with the idea of climate change, well, they're science deniers, and therefore they have to be dismissed as non-intellectual. No, this is your perspective, and you're welcome to that perspective. But the point where you begin telling other people that if you don't accept this, that you are somehow some type of heretic, that's where we get in trouble. Here's another example. We talk about science. Right now, we're at a place we're trying to decide whether to open up cities, states, countries, businesses, for that yeah. matter, dealing yeah. with the coronavirus. And people say, well, okay, let's trust the science. Well, science is part of the equation, but you also have economics that's also part of the equation. You can't just put one against the other and say, well, our scientific side is right. You also have to consider the health angle. You have to consider the economic angle. A lot of this is our dogmas are designed to make us feel comfortable and feel certain. And here's the key thing I think we have to come to, Wayne. We have to accept mystery. There is no way around it. There will always be mystery.
Yeah, and I think people often use dogma as a way to further their political aims.
Yes.
The joke about never let a crisis go to waste. We're seeing that out here in California with a governor who locked us down to flatten the curve, right?
Right.
And now we're locked down to make sure nobody gets the disease that doesn't have to. So we've changed from, hey, some people are going to get it and some are going to die, to we're going to stay locked down so that nobody gets the disease. And now the herd immunity is not going to happen. There's a number of other scientific factors, but I don't think he's so committed to the science as he is his political philosophy of government control. And now I'm really bothered that we've had mission creep. You locked us down saying we got to flatten the curve. Well, the curve is flat. All these hospitals are empty, are mostly empty.
Yes.
And now you've still got us locked down because the goal is we don't want anybody to die. But all you're doing is exercising government control against our freedom as people. And that needs to be balanced out somehow. And like you said, dogma doesn't serve us well.
No, it doesn't.
And I go back to the dogma of faith. I've seen this my whole life. We traded a relationship with the truth, with a capital T, who is Jesus, for dogma derived from a Bible, often misinterpreted. So we've got people not following Jesus. They're actually following dogma. And anybody who disagrees with them, like you said, is a heretic and needs to be excommunicated, needs to be punished, needs to be shamed, needs to be something, because we have the truth. And we've got 500,000 different visions of that truth under the same Bible, under the same claim of Christianity, which ought to, from the very start, make us say, okay, we've got to hold some of this loosely. Not who Jesus is, not what he's invited us to do into the world, but some of our narrow line interpretations. We have followed, I like the guy, and I forget his name, I wish I had, the famous quote, "The Bible is not the truth, it's the truth about the truth," with a capital T.
Oh, I love that.
And a sermon is not the truth. A sermon is the truth about the truth about the truth, with a capital T. And I love that it goes back to, if it's not relational, if you're not recognizing what's true inside a relationship with Jesus, which, like you said, has all kinds of mystery in it, because our finite minds cannot grasp all that he is. So we're seeing slivers of things. And it's okay for me to say, gosh, this is the light I have and I'm going to walk in it. It's another thing to say, this is the light I have and Vince, you're going to walk in it too, dadgummit. That's where dogma really doesn't serve us well. And I would think you, as a radio show host in a very conservative part of the country, man, don't you guys trade in dogma? This is interesting to me.
Well, see, I'm kind of in a different place because boy, I don't want to go off the political rail here, but
go ahead. I'd like to see it.
I do want to go to this place, Wayne, because I was going to give the example of what you described with what's happening politically. You're familiar with proof texting.
Yep.
How we can find, you know, just a Bible.
And I hate it.
And make a theology around it.
Yep.
And I mean, I was thinking about this morning, Wayne. One of my favorites. Because I have a birthday coming up. I won't say when, but I was having a discussion about birthdays, and it reminded me there was a radio preacher years ago who actually taught that it was unbiblical to celebrate birthdays because they're always associated with tragedy. Hmm. And he gave the example of Herod. Do you remember how, you know, the birthday party?
Oh, yeah.
And how that was where John the Baptist's head was served on a platter. Therefore, birthdays are bad, and they shouldn't be celebrated. That's a horrible proof text.
Oh, horrible.
But the truth of the matter is that's the kind of thing people do. Well, this happens in politics, too. I find the, quote, scientists who agree with me, who's going to, you know, someone's going to bolster my argument as to why we ought to keep everything shut down. And, you know, it's disheartening, especially when you watch even among doctors. Well, they're fighting each other now. You know, there are a couple of doctors. You probably saw the two doctors out in California.
Oh, yeah. They're 150 miles away from me.
Yeah. Extraordinary news conference. And I thought they made some very valid points. You had the emergency physicians put out a statement, not only undermining their science, but what was even worse than that, it accused them of having a profit motive for what they said.
Wow.
Which I thought was profoundly inappropriate. If you want to talk, and the thing is, they didn't even address their science. That news release did not tell me where they're wrong scientifically. What it did is it made personal attacks on them. So in other words, our science, we're smarter scientists than you are. This is dogma, and basically it's self-righteousness is what it is. And it's really interesting that this can be manifest. A person who tells me I'm not religious, you can be every bit as religious with science, with politics, whatever it is, as you can be with Christianity or any other religion. You can be dogmatic and religious and you can be a religious tyrant.
And Google and Facebook took off the videos of those two doctors.
Yes.
After
yes.
so many, you know, it didn't go with the World Health Organization's view of the problem. So we're pulling it down.
Yes.
And that, to me, gets to be where science, where, excuse me, government or even private industry begins to censor unpopular points of view. Now, I'm willing to say I think there's some elements of environmental science that people of faith ignore because they just want to exploit the planet for their own gain and think God's
absolutely.
So I think there's a lot of Christian rhetoric that's wrong on the planet. I think there is such a the climate is changing. How much of that is human caused and can be reversed? Well, we're seeing some of that now in the pandemic, right? Air in California has never been cleaner. People aren't driving around. I mean, there's ways we make a change in the way we live. And I don't.
Sure.
Yeah, that's that false binary, right?
Yes.
If the political yes. conversation, which you mentioned, if I'm talking to somebody and their point of view is President Trump can do no wrong, I'm done talking to them. I just am done. And if some person is saying President Trump can do nothing right, I'm done talking to them, too.
Amen.
Because those dogmatic statements don't allow us the conversation to say, well, you know what? Trump's got some things right. He's also yes. gotten some things wrong. It doesn't help when Trump stands up and says, I've done everything perfectly. I'm going, right. Hey, whiz, now you've invited your followers to endorse you completely. And many people, I'm going to go ahead and say it, many people are stupid enough to do that. They're going to just endorse it no matter what. I'm sure you get those callers on your radio show.
Wayne, don't get me started.
I don't mind.
I started to, I started to post on Facebook just the other day because I had a frustrating segment on my show. It wasn't even a caller, it was a texter. I made some comment and my producers will attest to this, how many times I will talk about something and maybe make some mention of the president. And amazingly, somebody will call or text in and say, you always say nasty things about the president. And we'll look at each other because I didn't say anything about the negative about the president. They will hear something. They will hear something that was not said. This is what happens when we have these filters on. And again, this is our dogma. So, I mean, and since you went there, Wayne, this is the dogma that many Christians have unfortunately have bought into. Either you're, let me just make an emphatic statement here. Let me make a dogmatic statement, Wayne,
okay.
that I can agree with and you'll agree with.
Well, let me see.
There's only one person who has the right to me. The only right, one person has the right to say to me, you're either for me or you're against me. And that's Jesus. If I put anybody else in that place, I'm an idolater. That's what's happened with Donald Trump. There are people that if you have one cross word to say about something he's done or said, they're gonna pull that card on you, say you're either for him or you're against him. If you're not for him 100%, then you're for the Democrats. You know, and I get people writing me nasty messages, you ought to go work for MSNBC or CNN. And it's frustrating to me because these people are not thinking at all. This is a manifestation of dogma. It's political dogma. So if you don't agree with me all the time on this is the way to support this particular person, this party, this ideology, then you are not worthy of being on my level. That's really what we're saying.
Yeah. And you can like Donald Trump without being an idolater. That's not what you said, right?
Exactly.
There are people who like him, people who like his policy, certainly better than what Mrs. Clinton would have done had she been president. And I get that. I absolutely get that. It's the inability of people to see nuance, to see that there's
right.
some things that he's not a god for Pete's sake. So he's not right about, he doesn't handle everything perfectly, nor should we expect any of our presidents to. None of our presidents right. have ever been perfect. Not Abraham Lincoln, not George Washington. They're men, and hopefully we'll have some women someday. But they're men like us, so they're going to make some good decisions, some bad decisions. And if we can't talk about that, then they can't make better decisions.
Exactly.
If we're so busy defending somebody that we can't honestly look at what's lacked, then we don't have the honest conversation to grow.
Exactly. And I, you know, it's weird. I'm in a very weird place, Wayne, because on that kind of thing, I find myself on social media you know, where I where I get sucked in sometimes unwisely, I challenge both sides. I challenge the always Trumpers and the never Trumpers. I mean, I've got some people, you know, I finally had to unfollow one friend of mine because it was just nonstop every day trashing Donald Trump. And honestly, it's hateful.
Yep.
I mean, the irony is this person would consider himself to be a very, you know, to be a very devout Christian. And it's just bilge. It's hateful bilge nonstop. Then on the other end of the spectrum, there are people that, you know, it's nonstop. You know, poor Donald Trump, the media is coming after him, and he, you know, it's, you know, and I try to insert question. What I do is I try to, most of the time I don't make statements. I just pose questions.
Yeah.
And I'll ask someone. Oh, a perfect example the other day, somebody was talking about, they were comparing governor, this again gets into politics, the New York governor, they were comparing him to President Trump. And I said, oh, how about the decision the governor made to send coronavirus senior citizens into nursing homes to infect other people? Was that a good decision too? The person never replied. Because see, this is what we do. We get on our side and we pick our candidate and we love this candidate and we hate the other one. And so what we're going to do is we're all in. And this is the danger of, again, of dogma. I'm going to embrace this person, this political party, come hell or high water. I'm going to defend it. Here's something important. I'm really thankful some of God's people God surrounded with me with the last 10 years. One truth that I've come to understand, when you're secure in your identity, when you're secure in your values, you don't have to defend them. And I think this is a good part of the so-called apologetics that I see many of us engaging in, whether it's for our churches, whether for our organizations. We're defending things that should not need to be defended. They should be able to stand alone. But the truth is, it's really not about the truth a good part of the time, Wayne. The problem is not the truth. That's not what we're trying to do. We are trying to defend ourselves because we want very much the approval of other people. And it makes us uncomfortable when people disagree with us.
Or we're just insecure, right? And insecurity.
Yes.
I find people who are the most brash about the very thing we're talking about dogma, are the most insecure people underneath
yes.
that dogma. The yes. dogma is where they're hiding. When we were talking the other day, I called it a false comfort. It's like that security blanket. My dogma gives me comfort. So when you challenge my dogma, you make me mad. And I was a football blog that I read. It's a blog about football. I like this guy, the way he thinks about other things. But he was asked this week, how do individuals in this country become more accepting of differences, more accountable for their actions, and find more common ground? And his answer was this: it begins with eliminating or at least overcoming our anger. Anger is a powerful human condition that exists naturally in all of us and is easily stimulated. Manipulative people prey on our anger. Please don't allow it. Isn't that good?
Wow.
Manipulative people prey on our anger. And manipulative people are often angry people, and they're angry people because they're insecure people.
Yes.
And that's why this is what I hope people hear about this danger of dogma thing. And you just say, oh, well, there's different dogmas and some are wrong and some are. Even where you're right.
Yes.
Dogma becomes destructive in the culture.
Yes.
Paul said that in Corinthians where he said, listen, knowledge puffs up. And he's not talking about false knowledge. He's
right.
talking about real knowledge. Knowledge will puff
yes.
you up. Love will build up other people. Love builds. And I think that to
yes.
me, when we were talking about this the other day, the dangers of dogma is, and I think so much, and let's get out of science and politics. I want to go back to faith. So much of quote unquote faith has been built in the last 2,000 years on dogma, whether it's Catholic dogma, Protestant dogma, Lutheran dogma, Calvin dogma. We're actually following our perception of principles instead of relating to and following Jesus, like you said earlier,
yes.
which
yes.
when we follow him, there's no arrogance in our knowledge. There's no got to force my view on someone else. There's a humility that travels inside truth learned in a relationship.
Yes.
And without that humility, we can't have conversations. Our whole language of healing talks about when you're the standard of stupid. And what that means is people who agree with me are smart and people who don't agree with me are stupid. When you've yes. become the standard of stupid, you've become an ignorant person because you think you know Ooh. All there is to be known.
Ouch.
And you don't. We all don't know what we don't know. That's why I love what you said. That's why we hold our perception of truth lightly. I don't hold truth lightly. But I know I don't know truth. I don't know the fullness of it. I don't know everywhere it applies in the nook and cranny. I walk in the light Jesus gives me each day.
Yes.
And there's enough for me to live in there without me being arrogant and angry and insecure about pushing my views yes. on other people.
Yes. Preach it. I'm there with you, Wayne. And one of the things that I mentioned, my friend Steve Crosby, who made a great point. In fact, he came on the broadcast last week. Because there's a companion subject to this dogma thing. Why do we buy into dogma? Well, it's because we want certainty. That's what we're looking for. We want a guarantee of certainty.
We want false certainty because there is yes. no real certainty.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
And if you don't believe that, look back at 3 months ago. You had no idea this would be your life 3 months ago.
Yes.
Right.
It's funny you say that because I gave this example. I had a friend just the other day who made a political prediction. He said, oh, I'm pretty sure this is going to happen. And I said, tell me something. Would you imagine that we would be in this place a month ago? And he thought for a second and said, oh, not a chance. Yeah. And I said, so how can you tell me you're confident what's going to happen 6 months from now? And he was like, I get your point here.
Yeah.
A lot has changed just over a period of a few weeks. Think of how great the economy was a few weeks ago. I have some close relationship with the airline industry. Airline industry was raking in money left and right just a few weeks ago. Yeah. Now I've got friends in the airline industry tell me they're going on flights with one and two people. You know, I saw a Southwest Airlines flight leave Charlotte a few weeks ago. A 737 holds like 140 people, one passenger. Now, did they imagine that 2 months ago, 3 months ago?
Yeah.
Of course not.
Have they got a business model for that?
No. Oh, there isn't one. And so, yeah. But coming back to this point, we have to accept, well, what are the certainties? I have the certainty, and this gets back in the spiritual realm. What are the certainties? The certainty is Jesus is Lord. His love, his abiding love, nothing can separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus. That's a certainty we can hold on to.
You left off one part of that certainty, though. Jesus is Lord, and you are not.
Amen to that.
That's the other part we really need. You are not. Trump is not. Biden is not. We have one Lord to follow.
Yes.
How do we live? One of the things you said to me in our conversation last week that that I really have been kind of dwelling on, you talked about the willingness to go beyond our answers. Remember that?
I think I remember that. Refresh my memory on that one.
I don't even know in what context. That's what I wrote down anyway. And I've been really thinking about in our own personal journeys, there was a point where our dogma no longer worked, right?
Oh, yes.
You didn't
yes.
just read a book one day and decide, oh, you know what? I'm wrong about a lot of things. What you do is you come up against a wall saying, my dogmatic thoughts about
doesn't work.
Jesus or about church are no longer working. So we have a choice. Are we going to retreat back into our dogma and say, okay, my experience is wrong. I've got to follow dogma, which people do, and they become soul dead. They become just...
Yes.
You know, dogma is following, making a tenet authoritative, which is idolatry, right? Because
yes.
God is authoritative. Our tenets about God are not authoritative. In fact, they can be wrong. What I love about that, and I think this is really strikes to the heart of what the God journey is all about. It's people who ran up to the end of their answers and decided
yes.
to go beyond them. I'm going to look for answers beyond the ones I used to think were all I needed. And most people aren't willing to make that risk.
You know what this comes back to, Wayne? How about this phrase, the just shall live by faith? Does it say the just shall live by
certainty?
These promises of what God is going to do if you follow this formula?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't say any such thing. So the whole idea of faith is I don't know. And the knowing is not focused on knowing Bible principles. The knowing is focused on knowing him. That's the certainty, is our relationship, our ongoing fellowship and relationship, and knowing he's going to be with us to the end of the age. That's the certainty we cling to, and that helps us to step out into the unknown.
And let's try a better word for faith, because I think faith, we talk about the faith, we talk about people living their faith, and what they mean is they're following dogma, right?
Right.
The word faith is really trust.
Relational
and
trust.
And trust is relational. You don't have trust in a thing. If you do, you're going to be messed up plenty. But to me, if we took that word trust and put it almost everywhere where we find faith in the Bible, because I think faith takes us to, I'm following my faith as a religion. Instead of my faith is a growing knowledge of who he is, a willingness to listen to him and follow him in my life. That's the life of faith. The life of faith is not trying to get scriptural promises to be fulfilled by my claiming them, praying them, getting hundreds of people to pray with me for them. It's right. Knowing him, living with him, and letting him flow out of us. That's where we've got to get back to. And to me, the fact that we're the false comfort of dogma, I think, is just, if we see it as that, because it's not, and not saying the false comfort of truth, it's just saying we don't know truth as well as we think we know it.
Right.
And so Jesus keeps inviting us into deeper layers of his reality. And are we willing to go, or are we going to retreat back into these false comfort, which is, again, we get back to insecurity and anger. That's why so many Christians are angry people.
Yeah.
Because they're insecure. Their dogma isn't working. They feel like they're a failure, or God is, and all that anger comes out in ways that's destructive to them and to the world.
And it's, you know, it's sad to me, and I've had, just because of some work situations I've been in, I've been had opportunities and connections with people in the gay community, for instance. One of the sad things that's come across to me is the message many of them have received, which is, it's kind of a singular message, which is a rejection of them based on their sin. And the reason this is so important is some things, like I had a guy say to me the other day, he said, I was at a church where I heard a pastor say, God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. On the surface, that's true. Was that helpful to this particular person? No, he never went to church again. Because from his perspective, and we can look at it and say, well, he shouldn't have been offended or whatever, or maybe he should have been offended. The real question becomes, was there a message there to communicate and reach out and cause this person to want to experience a relationship with him? Or are we just so clever, we love sharing our little lines and our little truths, not realizing that unless we engage in love, it's all worthless. It doesn't have any lasting meaning. That's where the security comes in our love and our relationship, so we can be who we are without having to convince people.
And then when you get to love in the world, then the Holy Spirit gets to be the convincer. And
yes,
no matter what our struggle is in life, no matter what temptations or affections, whatever we have, we're all broken people. And it's only love that transforms. The whole idea that truth transforms people is just absurd, because people can't see truth unless they see it inside of love. And to me, that was the best theme of the shack to me, is Mac was ready for truth when he'd found a connection to love.
Yes.
Knowing I'm loved, I can face stuff. If I don't know I'm loved, then I'm going to live in that insecurity and fear and dogma, and I'm going to blast people who disagree with me because I've got to be right and they've got to be wrong, because that's where my certainty is. And you're wrong. And you're messing up the whole world with that kind of stuff. So, man, we're getting to the end of it, Vince. I love your thoughts on this. I'm glad we had a chance to talk about it. If you get that link up finally, I know you guys are behind on some of your technology at the station, but get that link up. Let me know. I'll put it at the bottom of this podcast so people can hear what you originally said on that. And thanks for coming on today. Thanks for joining me for this. This is great.
Hey, my pleasure. It's been an absolute blessing, Wayne.
It always is, Vince. I enjoy you. Enjoy our friendship. And hopefully I can get back Charlotte someday. We can sit down and talk.
Yes. Once all this craziness is over with, look forward to connecting again.
That'd be great fun. God bless you, brother.
God bless you.
Stay safe. Wow. My mind's been exploding since Vince and I talked last week, and then to share this with him. To take a word that is used so positively inside Christendom, the idea of dogma and how important and critical it is that we believe the right truths and hold to certain doctrines. And yet when that dogma when what's true gets divorced from the truth himself, who Jesus is, that dogma becomes a trap. And it becomes a danger to each other. And I looked it up after we were done talking. Dogma is used very few times in Scripture and never positively. It's decrees from the government. That's dogma. It's used that way. It's also used in terms of the elementary principles of the world or the ordinances of law. And each time it's used, it's talking about inviting us beyond it, beyond dogma. Interesting. Perhaps the most important part of this podcast was this, being willing to move beyond your answers, particularly your religious answers, all the ones we've been sold, wrapped up into neat little bows and said, this is what you can believe. And if you believe this, all will be well. And then we run into situations in our life that take us beyond our answers. And now the opportunity is there for growth. Am I going to retreat back into my dogma and pretend it works, even if it doesn't? Or am I going to move beyond my answers and explore a richer life in Christ that goes beyond tenets and now finds me a way to follow him in the love and life and freedom that he gave us in the cross and his resurrection and now by the Holy Spirit living in us? Oh my goodness. I hope that captures you in a way that allows you to think beyond your answers. Then you may find the real ones.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.